Welcome to the Hockey Writers What's Kraken, a weekly show with our top Seattle Kraken writing crew, bringing you the latest news, rumors, trades, player grades, game results, and much more. From training camp to the playoffs, from the first ever puck drop to their future rivalries, our team covers everything that happens with the Kraken. So sit back, relax, and get ready to find out what's kraken.
Welcome to the THW What's Kraken show, hosted by me, Tom Pepper, Sean Raggio, and Adam Kurzenblatt. Presented by the Hockey Writers, we talk Seattle Kraken hockey every week on iHeartRadio, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to check out our written work at thehockeywriters.com and follow the show on Twitter at What's Kraken Show, as well as our personal accounts at Tom Pepper, at Raggio9124, and at Adam K. Blatt. We are back now for episode 16, and Kraken hockey is getting pretty exciting. They've had five wins in the last six games. So, or is it four in the last five? I don't know. I'm getting all confused with my numbers now, but they're doing well lately. So we're going to have some exciting stuff to talk about. But before that, how are you guys doing? How's your week been, Adam?
It's been good. You know, everything is chaos in Vancouver like usual. So that's always something fun to look out for. You know, it's an interesting time because the Kraken aren't very good. The Canucks aren't very good. And then now I have to deal with watching the Seahawks pull whatever that was on Monday Night Football. So it's just a whole bunch of fun in the Pacific Northwest right now.
How are you doing, Sean?
Well, I mean, it's fair that you got those numbers confused because it came after a six game losing streak. So that number has been smacked in the face of Kraken faithful everywhere. So
yeah,
don't blame you for that. I've been doing all right. You know, long weekend was nice. Very, you know, saw friends, family. It was good, man. Ready to talk Kraken hockey. And it's nice to see that they've actually been looking. I didn't want to say playing meaningful hockey because, you know, every game for them at this point is meaningful hockey, but just they seem like a bit of a new team almost with the way they're playing. It's a new kind of confidence, I should say.
Yeah, it really feels like they're starting to get their identity together, and the goaltending's taken a bit of a step up. So there's some reason to be optimistic with the Seattle Kraken right now, especially considering the teams they were taking down, like the Capitals and the Hurricanes and the Florida Panthers. So some pretty impressive stuff. My week has been pretty great, honestly. My parents went away for a few nights to Montreal, so I got to hang out with my dog, had the house to myself. That was fun. And then just last night I went to the Kraken at Sabres game, so that was awesome. I was sitting right behind the bench, so you can see me on, I was watching the broadcast back after, you could see me show up every once in a while drinking my beer. That's the first time I've ever sat behind an NHL bench, and they are not, it's not great for viewing. I literally didn't see much of the game at all. So I'm halfway through watching what happened last night. But for the experience, it was extremely cool just sitting that close to everyone, with Brandon Tanev a foot away from me and just all the guys coming on the bench and off and seeing their conversations. There was one point Tanev and Tage Thompson on the Sabres bench were having a yelling match right in front of me. It was going on. So it's very cool for the experience, but if you're going to watch the hockey game, I wouldn't recommend the seats. but we'll let's get on with the show here. So, of course, we're entering a new month. It's the end of November now. So if you were watching the show back in October, we did our October Players of the Month, and now we've got our November Players of the Month. So we got three stars, and we'll just go straight to the first one. So we each pick one of these players. There's no specific order as to which one's the best, but our first one on the list is Jordan Eberle. So he's obviously had an outstanding November. He leads the team with 9 goals in the month, and he's second in points with 12. He's also still out of the entire season. He's first in goals with 11 this season and second in points with 16, so one behind Jaden Schwartz. He's also been a huge part of the Kraken's power play success, which has really started to take off after struggling quite immensely at the start of the season. That was a huge issue for Seattle, but they started to figure that out. Jordan Eberle this month, four power play points, including 3 goals. So he's been a big part of that. He also had the first hat trick in Kraken history, November 4th against Buffalo. So he's just had an outstanding month in my books. He went down with a lower body injury last night, and we don't really have an update on that yet. So hopefully everything's good there, because he means a lot to this team. But I'll jump to you. You want to go first, Adam? What's your analysis on Jordan Eberle's month?
I mean, he's doing exactly what he was brought in to do. Jordan Eberle, over his career, he's paid to score goals, and now he's finally scoring goals. We knew that it was going to, you know, eventually happen. October was a little bit of a struggle for most of the players, you know, new surroundings. So this is kind of the Jordan Eberle that we expected. And he really stepped up to the plate this month, really earning that paycheck. What about you, Sean?
Honestly, you hit the nail on the head. That's what my one thing I've been harping on, where they were two guys who I feel like were really brought in to be scorers, producers, and lead the way in that department. And Jordan Eberle was one of them. And he's stepped up and he's becoming what they need him to be. Is it realistic to think he's going to be a point per game player? No. Should they be asking him to be? No, they shouldn't be. But he should be in the top three point producers for this team. And I think that if he keeps playing this way, he will definitely be there by the end of the year.
Yeah, and it's very relieving for Kraken fans to see, especially considering how slow of a start he had to the season. I think a lot of people were worried if he fit in with the Kraken and if he was going to still be able to keep his play going. And it looks like if you take November's sample, it looks like he's on the right track now. So we'll see what happens. But things are looking good for Jordan Eberle. We'll move on now to our second star of the month, another guy who's been finding a lot of success on offense this month. I'll hand it over to Sean.
I don't think this guy likes me very much, to be honest with you. And I think he's proving it. So this isn't just me asserting things. And it's because I called him out. It was Halloween. They lost to the Rangers, and I called him out. Jaden Schwartz, you need to start scoring. You were one of, as I said, two guys brought in to score. You need to start scoring. So what's he do? Scores next game against Edmonton, the next day against Edmonton. And he's been on a tear since. He's got 8 assists, 5 goals, 13 points this month. The most shots during the month, which is good to see, because if I recall, he was not really shooting the puck nearly as much as he should have been to start the season. 4 points against Washington, huge in a game against the ageless Alex Ovechkin. I can't even put the words what that guy's doing now. We knew he was going to still be elite, but he's putting up better assist numbers, let alone goal numbers, than he has been in years, right? And I think that he's going to be here for the next couple of years. I don't see him as whether you end up tanking or you make a run. You're not going to remove Jaden Schwartz from the picture. And he's finding his game, and it's going to be big for the Kraken if they want to keep climbing back up those standings. They got a lot of ground to make up after that 6-game losing streak. 4 wins and 5 helps. And no offense, Adam and producer Matt, but having the Canucks do what they're doing is certainly helping the Kraken right now. But I'll toss it over to you guys. Tom, what's your stance on Schwartz so far this season?
I think he's really picked up his game. Just like, again, like Jordan Eberle, these are the kind of players that you need to step up if the Kraken are going to get back into it. It's taken them a little bit too long to kind of turn the Jets on. But if the team does want a chance at somehow competing for a playoff spot going forward, these are the guys that you're going to need producing: Jordan Eberle and Jaden Schwartz. And the fact that they are the first one and two that we've named of our three stars of the month really shows that they are putting in the work, and they're really finding success. Schwartz scored again last night. He had another great opportunity. He could have had 2 goals last night. He's playing with confidence, and he's finding the back of the net. He's also making some great plays. So this is what Kraken fans like to see. So yeah, that's all I've got to say. What do you have to add, Adam?
Well, what I like about Jaden Schwartz is that they have moved him kind of around. You know, they have been switching up the lines, and he has been producing, not just on the score sheet, but he's producing chances. You know, he's going to the net more. It seems like he's getting those rebound chances. He's creating more offense. So just because he has, just because he only has 13 points, doesn't mean he can't have more because of the offensive chances that he's created. So overall, it's a good month. I know his points are going to be a little bit inflated because he did have that 4-point night against Washington, but it's a good sign to see these players starting to step up and produce, because that's what, like we said, that's what they're paid for. They're paid to score goals. They're paid to produce offensive chances, and they're paid to put the team on their back once in a while, like he did against Washington.
And you want to see consistency, not just from him, but from the team. Too many times this season, it's been a matter of which crack in a team is going to show up. They could look great and win, and then just look completely terrible and get smacked. Now, you want a team that, if they're not going to win, they're getting beat. They're not that they're losing, they're getting beat. Because if they're getting beat, that implies to me that they're in the game, and it's not like they're just rolling over. You want that consistency. And if you're going to lose the game, be that you were beaten, not that you lost. Does that kind of make sense as much as I'm
getting it.
I had some during a Super Bowl a couple years ago, I told my friend, I said, I forget the team. Let's say the Packers are either going to win the game or they're going to lose the game. And I feel like this was a bit more eloquent way of expressing what I meant than that just statement that got me bullied for years. No. Not actually.
Well, yeah, Jaden Schwartz, again, he's been great this month. He leads the team in points right now with 17. So those are our first two stars so far, Jordan Eberle and Jaden Schwartz. They're really helping the Kraken redeem their season. But now we'll go on to our third star of the month. I'll hand it over to Adam. I sat behind this guy last night, and he is pretty big in real life. So take it away.
So some may know this person as Penny Oleksiak's brother, but Jamie Oleksiak has been arguably the best defenseman on the Kraken for the last month. You know, in October, my best player was Adam Larsson. Now I'm going Jamie Oleksiak because I feel like the defense doesn't get him enough credit. This is a guy who had 39 hits this month, 16 block shots, and he led all defensemen with 23 shots on goal. So this is a defense corps that has guys like Vince Dunn and Mark Giordano, and Jamie Oleksiak is getting pucks on net. He had the most points of any defenseman this month with 1 goal, 5 assists for 6 points. And his best game came against Florida, where he had a goal, assist, 3 hits, and 3 block shots in just under 20 minutes of ice time. With Mark Giordano sidelined with COVID, Jamie Oleksiak really had to step up into that role. He's playing top line minutes right now, top pairing minutes. His, you know, depending on what the power play, how many power plays they get, that's going to determine how many minutes he gets because he doesn't play on the power play. So when the Kraken are on the penalty kill a lot, his numbers are going to be in that 23-24 range. When they're on the power play a lot, it's going to be in that 19-20 range. But this guy, he's done it all. He's been a silent leader for this team. He's not afraid to throw hits. He's not taking penalties, which is important. Bigger guys, you know, Jamie Oleksiak is not the fastest player on the ice. He's there to be kind of like a brick wall. And, you know, with these bigger guys, you see a lot of penalties being taken. So the fact that Jamie Oleksiak isn't taking a lot of penalties is a big positive for this team, and making sure that they're really stepping up and, you know, bringing that offense from the back end, which the Kraken have desperately needed all season.
Yeah, and it's great to note that he's not finding himself in the box too often, because he has 39 hits in November, which is a pretty high number. And obviously with his size, he's an extremely valuable piece to the Kraken, especially considering how they want to establish this hard-hitting, hard forechecking identity. Oleksiak doesn't let people get past him easy. And that's, again, part of what this identity that the Kraken are building, and he's really leading the way in that area. He has 16 block shots, and he's also not afraid to shoot on goal. He has 23 shots this month on goal. So I've really liked what I've seen from him. And yeah, with Giordano out, and we get to see a bit more of him now, he might even be able to earn some more minutes going forward. But where he is right now, I really like his game. What do you think, Sean?
You know, you can shoot. What's important here is you can shoot the puck as much as you want, but the shots are getting through. As you said, 23 shots on goal. And because of that, last night it translated to a rebound that led to a goal, hence his assist. So that's huge for them. And it's a general theme for the Kraken. Their defense is being a lot more offensive than I anticipated, at least coming into the season. I think it was 13 out of their 32 shots were from defensemen last night, and three different defensemen, including Oleksiak, had three shots on goal. I think it was also Hayden Fleury and Vince Dunn, or for the fans, two nights ago. This was the game against the Sabres. And he's on pace, known to be a defensive defenseman, physical guy. He's on pace for a new career high in points. So I think that definitely might get overshadowed, but I like that you're putting the spotlight on him now. And especially because Giordano's point totals are definitely not where I think anyone would have thought they would be at the start of the season, being the number one guy. Yes, he's regressed a bit, but still the onus is a lot more on him than the other guys, being the captain, being that guy with the experience that he has, And I think that it's partially been the reason that Oleksiak's been allowed to have such a good season with, you know, almost under the radar. You know, if you're watching the games, you know, but for just the, you know, the general casual hockey fan, you might not be realizing how good this guy's been at both ends of the ice.
Yeah, and it's great for the Kraken because this team was originally planned on being built from the net out, and they've been, ironically, they've been struggling in net and on defense to start the season. So things haven't been working out for them in that point, but later in November, we're starting to see things change, and guys like Jamie Oleksiak are stepping up on defense, and the Kraken are finding themselves in better situations and are able to take down some of the best teams in the league. So I think as these players continue to improve and they start building chemistry as a new expansion team together, we could see them maybe take a turn on this season. It might be too late to make a battle for the playoffs, but who knows? When they're competing like this against some of the team's top or some of the league's top teams, you never know. It's hockey, so anything can happen. So to wrap it up, our three stars of the month were Jordan Eberle, Jaden Schwartz, and Jamie Oleksiak. So we will be able to do another one at the end of December, and we'll see who it is then, because who were our players last month? Do you remember? I remember
Tanev, McCann, and Adam Larson.
There you go. Very interesting. So three completely different players in November. So
good for them.
Exciting stuff.
Yeah.
Exciting stuff. All right. We'll jump into the next segment of the show here. We're going to now, instead of just reviewing three players from the month of October, we'll just review the Kraken in general and how they performed this last month, because it's been quite a season turning month, I'd say, for the Kraken. And, you know, there's reason to be optimistic in Seattle with this team right now. So they won five games this month, 10 points in 13 games. And like I said at the top of the show, they've won four of their last five games. So they beat the Capitals, the Hurricanes, the Panthers, and most recently, the Buffalo Sabres. So obviously, at least the first three teams there, very impressive wins. And I thought they performed very well in those wins. And it looks like this team is building confidence and establishing this identity that we've been waiting for them to really find this whole season. It seems like they've found it some games, and then they show up the next game and it's just not there anymore. But now they're kind of finding some consistency with this, and they're able to take down some great teams here. So things are looking good. Another thing that's really stepped up is the power play. The 25% on the power play in November, that's incredible compared to where they were earlier in the season, when they were really struggling to find back on the net, even to set up the zone on the power plays. So that's great. Penalty kill, 75.9%, could use some improvement. But hey, the season's still young, and if they've turned the power play around now, then maybe there's time to turn the penalty kill around now too. So I'll hand it over to you first, Adam. What have you thought about the Kraken in November?
Well, they didn't play well for the first, 20 days of the month, but then they've really started to come on the last couple days. Chris Driedger, back-to-back wins, which is something I don't think that we've been able to say too much the season from a goaltender. I don't even think that that a goalie has had back-to-back wins. Could be wrong about that, but yeah, they've just struggled on the road. That's like the problem is, yeah, six of their 13 games were on the road, so less than half of their games were on the road, but it's... They couldn't gain any momentum because either at home or on the road, really, until the end of the season. On the road this month, they had a 15.4% power play, and a 69.2% penalty kill and only two wins. So you look at that and you say, okay, well, their power play is at 25%, which means that their power play at home is clicking at such a high percentage that it's bringing up the average that much. So they need to be better on special teams. That's obvious. They need to be better in goaltending. That's obvious. Luckily, these last couple games, these last five games, they've really shown that they can be a better team, but it might be too little too late now. So we'll see what happens. I'm looking forward to like this month in December because, yeah, we have two games against the Edmonton Oilers. So how can they go up against those division rivals? A lot of their games this month are against the division rivals. So if you can collect points off of division games, that's more important than collecting points off of Carolina or Washington, Pittsburgh or Buffalo. How are they going to do against the teams that they're seeing multiple times and the teams that they're fighting for a playoff spot rather than the teams that they only see twice a year?
Yeah, they've been playing a lot of Eastern Conference teams lately. So I think that's a great point that they've got more Western Conference rivals coming up. And I'm interested to see how they do against guys like Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, because they're going to continue to be tested by some of the top players in the league. And I think seeing these amazing Eastern teams over the past couple weeks here against the Kraken was extremely interesting and eye-opening to what this team's capable of. But it'll be very interesting to see the teams they're actually competing with for playoff spots. And you think back, you mentioned the Oilers play the Kraken twice, Leon Draisaitl and McDavid. Grubauer and Driedger haven't had any chance to play against those players. As you remember last time, Joey Decord was in net. He was actually all right, but the puck did get it past him quite a few times. Not necessarily his fault. It's kind of hard to stop shooters like McDavid and Draisaitl, but I think there's some great challenges ahead, not only for the goaltending, but for the defense, which has really started to step up and come together lately. So it's going to be an exciting month to just see how this team continues to develop. But I'll hand it over to you now, Sean. What do you see for the Kraken?
I see two question marks. The first one is their defensemen. They've been cycling, you know, between Hayden Fleury, Carson Soucy, and Jeremy Lauzon. And now Will Borgen should be, he's earned his right in that mix. He had an assist against the Sabres, and I think he had a shot or two as well. And he's had, if I recall, 8 blocks through 2 games. Now this kid's playing like someone who knows this might be his one chance, and he wants to stick in this lineup, which will make things even more confusing considering Fleury was expected to play, at least from what I recall from our projections, a decent role in this lineup and take another step forward in his development. Soucy is one of the top scoring defensemen on the team, and Lauzon's been a staple on that penalty kill, which, again, not something I anticipated coming to the season. That and goaltending. I don't think Grubauer should be the starter. I think it should be 1A, 1B, and I think that Dave Hakstol might be leaning towards this at this point. You know, Driedger started 2 games in a row, and I'm very curious to see if he starts in their next game against Detroit in Detroit. To me, I don't want to. That'll be significant if he starts that. If he starts a 4th in a row, then I might be seeing a bit of a switch, and he'll be looking at Driedger as the starter and Grubauer as a backup, but I really think it needs to be a 1A, 1B split. I still think that Grubauer is overworked. I think that it was good that Decord got some time when Driedger was out. Those were 2 starts that Driedger could have had, but I still think that Decord needs work in the AHL before he's ready to be backup level goaltender. I think that I don't want to use the word controversy because if things go my way, this is a 1A, 1B, and the Kraken will have 2 relatively rested goaltenders, but I'm very interested to see what happens after this game against the Red Wings and how they're going to handle those 4 defensemen who seem to be cycling spots as a 5 or a 6 defenseman on this team when Giordano gets back.
Yeah, I like what you said about the 1A, 1B tandem, because I completely agree on that. I thought that was originally what was going to happen at the beginning of the season. I don't know if that was the original plan before Driedger went down, but Hakstol was really, really keeping, he was just sticking Grubauer in net every single game, and it became a bit excessive to one point, and I was kind of confused as to why he was doing this when Driedger was back healthy and Grubauer clearly wasn't performing well in net. And I thought it would be nice to give him a break. And now Drieger's come in and he's proven that maybe he can step up and serve a 1A, 1B role. You were going to say something, Sean?
Yeah, in my head, I think of that. I equate that to you get someone who's usually a money shooter in basketball who's having an awful night. You tell them, you know, you're usually shooting lights out. Try and shoot yourself out of it. You know, that's a lot different than try to win yourself out of these hockey games when you're getting so much different styles of competition, types of competition, not to take anything away from basketball. But to me, it's such a different concept telling a shooter to shoot your way out of it than a goaltender to try and save your way out of it, because it's not always entirely up to them. You know, you get guys enough breakaways, enough two-on-ones, enough backdoor tap-ins. You can only do so much at that point, right? Your practice, your training can only get you so far from at that point. So that's kind of how I look at it. And I think that that's for a goaltender, that's the wrong thought to take, because look, you could argue that Jordan Eberle and Jaden Schwartz shot their way out of it, right? But that's not going to happen with your goaltender. And if anything is going to exhaust them by March, April, it's going to be done. If miraculously they were able to make it to the playoffs, you'd be exhausted. And then you need to rely on that backup /1B.
Yeah. Yeah. And another thing that I was going to add that I think is interesting to note is, well, Grubauer was a Vezina Trophy finalist last season. So, you know, he is capable of being one of the best goaltenders in the league. And I pointed out, I think I pointed this out in an earlier article just after the expansion draft, how Grubauer, I think he had 39 starts for the Avalanche last year. And Drieger, I believe, was 23 starts for the Florida Panthers. So their numbers actually already worked perfectly if you were going to bring them in as a 1A, 1B tandem. So, you know, it was kind of unprecedented for Grubauer to play that many games. So maybe if Haxtell does switch this 1A, 1B, we might start to see numbers similar to what they had last year when they're not being overworked as much and where they're playing at a comfortable amount of games. So we'll see what happens. We'll see. Because recently they've been playing well, so there's some reason to be optimistic. But overall this season, goaltending has been quite a weak spot for the Kraken. But these are two guys who have proven themselves in the past, and maybe they'll be able to turn it around if they're getting played properly. So we'll jump into our final segment of the show now. Who should be the Seattle Kraken's number one center? So three people that are in the running pretty much are Jared McCann, Yanni Gourde, and Alex Wennberg, who have, I mean, all three of them have been pretty solid centers for this team. Faceoff numbers haven't been super strong. Gourde's 53.36% in the faceoff circle, while McCann and Wennberg are just over 49% each. I'll hand this over to you first, Adam. Who do you think gets the starting number one role?
Well, for me, I think Wennberg is probably the best option to be that number one center. He's shown great chemistry with Jordan Eberle and Jane Schwartz so far this season. He's got some chemistry with Jonas Donskoy, if you want to throw it up there. McCann, for me, is not a center. He's more comfortable on the wing. He always has been more comfortable on the wing. He can play center if you need it. But to me, you don't put him in the center because he kind of lacks that two-way game, that defensive game, and that's something that you need as a center. Yanni Gourde is a great option, but I just feel like if you have Yanni Gourde on your second line and Alex Wennberg on your first line, it will actually boost the production of Yanni Gourde because he won't be drawing those matchups more often. Yanni Gourde has never been really a number one center. Yeah, he did play, you know, elevated up the lineup in Tampa Bay at times, but Stamkos is that number one center. You got Brain Point. Yanni Gourde was kind of that second, third option, depending on who was available. So I don't think that he's a number one center just yet. Alex Wennberg has shown that he can be a number one center in the past. So I think that's who you would go with in the future, but it also depends on the line mates. You know, if you decide to put Yanni Gourde with James Schwartz and Jordan Eberle, that's your number one line right there. But right now, I think that Alex Wennberg has shown, even though he does have the least amount of points of all of those, I think based off of history and the way that he's played this season, I think that Wennberg should take that number one center role for sure.
Yeah, and I like what you mentioned there about Gord maybe being better to suit on the second line because he's going to be avoiding those higher level faceoff matchups, and he's got 14 points in 18 games, so he's doing very well. And if you can get him against lesser competition, I mean, he's back to back Stanley Cup champion. This guy's a guy with a lot of confidence, and he's a very highly skilled player, and so. If you're able to get him on the ice a lot and against weak competition, this guy can really dominate. So I do also think Wennberg, he should be in the one or the first or second line center the way he's been playing. I've really liked his play so far. Again, you mentioned he doesn't have as many points as the other two we've mentioned, but I think he's been very strong center. So that's my take. What do you think, Sean?
Feels so validated because I was originally very much against putting McCann at center. So just to hear that Adam just makes me feel like, for those who are listening and not watching on YouTube, I was celebrating like I just scored a goal. But I'm going to be annoying with this. I don't think we should be looking at it like who specifically, which one player should be put as the number one center, because I don't think this team, I'd argue they don't have a true number one center in the sense that they don't have a Stamkos, they don't have a Crosby, they don't have a McDavid. I think it should be based on line merit. For example, that McCann, Geeky, Tanev line, in my opinion, was their best line last game. McCann had 3 points. Excuse me. Tanev had a goal and two assists. Geeky, two assists. McCann, two goals. I think that if you slot them in as your third line, fine, especially when you have the last change, that could get you some interesting looks out there. I think that it should be more based on who you're going to throw out there, then this is going to be my depth chart first line. So I guess by that logic, it would be Geeky, who's centering that line, who would be their number one center. But to me, I don't want to look at it as this is going to be my first line. Let's move these guys down. If you put them as the third line and they're starting your game, that's your top line. You know, productive based on their play last game, that's your top line. That's your number one center. And that might not be what y'all are looking for. And I'm okay with that.
I think a lot of people say with lines in hockey, you don't necessarily look at them for the numbers. You just look at them for what they are and what each line brings to the team. So maybe there isn't even necessarily a number one center. Maybe there's just four lines and you find a center that works best with the two wingers in each line. And you don't even consider it by numbers. Just choose who's playing best and put that line out.
The Islanders, if I recall correctly, their first shift at UBS, the identity line started. I mean, you have Barzal, among others, on that team, and you have Casey Cizikas taking your first draw in stadium history. You know, obviously, they're not going to be playing 20 minutes a game, but, you know, it's that kind of thing where if that's a line that's trusted to the start of the game, and I would trust a third line of Jared McCann, Morgan Geeky, Brandon Tanev to start a game and to close a game, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great analysis. I love it. Any last words on this topic, on the centers?
Well, you know, we do like to talk about centers, and I want to throw out a question for you guys here. You know, this guy, there was a whole bio about him in Tuesday's Morning Skate, Mario Lemieux. So that's somebody, you know, if the Kraken could find a center like him, that would solve a lot of problems. But I do want to ask you one question. Now, Mario Lemieux, he didn't really play full seasons because there was always an injury or season suspended or something was going on. But do you feel like if Mario Lemieux played an 82 game season, that he may have been able to, you know, pass Gretzky in some sort of capacity for single season, you know, whether it was goals, assists, or points, like just for one season alone? That's it. I'm not talking like career, because that's career numbers. Gretzky is going to win every time because he was just on another level. But on a single season scoring, do you think that Mario Lemieux could have passed Gretzky if he played an entire season? I'll throw this one out there. So Mario Lemieux's best season, 1988-89, 199 points in 76 games. Gretzky's best season, 215 points in 80 games in 1985. So do you think if Mario Lemieux played those extra games, he could have passed 215 on the season?
Still in that era we're talking about, or right?
Yeah, in 1988-89, if Mario Lemieux played 82 games, an 82-game season, do you think that he could have passed, or even an 80-game season, do you think he could have gone those 16 points in those 4 to 6 games needed to tie or break Gretzky's single-season record?
That's tough. Tom, you take this one first.
It's tough. I think it's definitely possible. I obviously wasn't watching hockey back in those days, so my analysis isn't going to be the best on it, but I think Mario Lemieux was an absolutely incredible player, and I still don't think he deserves, I still don't think he gets enough recognition that he deserves for how just highly talented he was and how great of an NHL player he was. And you just mentioned those number there, and it's really making me think. I think there is a chance he could have done that if he had played more full seasons, but it is tough to say. You got any opinion, Sean?
I'm looking at some stats right now because I remember when he came back from cancer, he went on an absolute tear.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I think if I remember, that was a 92-93 season, and excuse me if I'm wrong. And in 60 games, he finished with 69 goals and 160 points. If he was with the right teammates, it's so hard because him and Gretzky played like different styles of game too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but you know, he had Jágr on his wing a lot of the time.
And Gretzky had Curry, Messier, you know, not to minimize that. But I think that if any era was going to be the guy to do that, I think it would be Mario Lemieux. No disrespect to someone like Gordie Howe, I think it would be Mario Lemieux.
Yeah, I like that statement. we could run it through maybe one of those NHL sims. If you're listening and you haven't seen, Adam wrote a great piece. He took the Hockey Writers pre-expansion team, what we put together, and the team that they ended up having, and he ran them through a simulation to see who would do better. The Hockey Writers were the better team, so I think we all feel pretty proud about that. But was an incredible piece, and hey, I don't know, maybe we could. Yeah. You could test it out, Gretzky versus Mario Lemieux head-to-head for a season.
I don't know what you said, Don, but simming on PS4 takes forever, so shout-out to you, dude. That was good on you.
Well, yeah. Like, you know, when we talk about Lemieux, like, you know, at the age of 37, he had 91 points in 67 games in 2002-2003. You know, like, just think about that.
Yeah.
I know Ovechkin might be able to do that. That, you know, he's coming up to 37. He might be able to put up 91 points. But when was the last time you heard of anybody age 37 putting up 91 points in 67 games?
Not often.
And in the dead puck era, really. You know, like that, this, you look at it and it sucks because he never really played an entire, there was always something that kept him out of games. And he only finished with 1,723 points. It's like, oh, that's disappointing. It's but less than 1,000 games and you finish with 1,700 points. I don't know. I feel like, you know, he may have been able to, if he played that full season, no injuries, no nothing. I do feel like he may have been able to beat a single season record, whether it was goals or points that Gretzky put up. I don't think he would have done it for assists. Because Gretzky, I think, had, 165 in one season. I don't think anybody's passing that. But I think he could have, you know, passed the 92 goals or the 215 points if he played an entire season with no problems whatsoever.
Love it. Good hockey talk. I'm looking forward to the days where we can look back at, like, today's modern NHL and we'll be comparing McDavid maybe to someone like Shane Wright or Connor Bedard, like maybe even future players who come up and step up, because I think hockey is really at a turning point right now. When you look at, for example, when you look back at these clips when Mario Lemieux and Wayne Gretzky are playing, it's almost a completely different sport to what's going on now. The game's just gotten so much faster. The hitting is just, and so you could argue that back then it was more physical with the fighting and stuff. But today it's just the athletic skill when you, especially if you go to a game in person, like, cause I'm fresh off seeing a game just last night, and the speed and the size of these players is just absolutely incredible. So I think as the sport continues to progress, we're going to have more and more of these arguments, and it's going to become more and more controversial as time goes on. And I think that's great for the sport, and it's exciting for everyone, for all hockey fans. So I love conversation like these. I wish I was around to see Wayne Gretzky and Mario Lemieux in their prime, but unfortunately I wasn't born that time. So I missed out on that. But hey, we're in a new era of exciting, fast-paced hockey with some extremely, I feel extremely privileged to watch some of the talented players in the league today. So it's awesome. It's awesome. Good stuff. Any last words on the Kraken before we wrap up?
Take us home, baby.
I do want to say we scored, the Kraken scored, I should say, first shorthanded goal, actually first two shorthanded goals in Kraken history last night. That was pretty exciting. Turbo there with the second one had made a great effort against Rasmus Dahlin of the Sabres up the ice on just one-on-one, and he was able to beat him on the rebound. So it's exciting. More records being broken in Kraken history, the young history of the Kraken. All right, let's wrap it up. Thank you for tuning into this week's episode of THW What's Kraken. We hope you enjoyed the show and look forward to next week as we'll be breaking down any Seattle Kraken news and rumors that come up over the next few days. Again, make sure to check out our written work at thehockeywriters.com and follow the show on Twitter at What's Kraken Show, as well as our personal accounts at Tom Pepper, at Raggio9124, and at Adam K. Blatt. From Tom, Sean, and Adam, this has been THW What's Kraken.